Internet, I promise someday our website will be back up and running. Until then, you can catch us on our social media channels and stuff. Go to facebook.com/TheBenchCast or facebook.com/Devil's Bench. If you don't put the .com in there, I don't know what happens, so make sure you do that, I guess. Also, if you know of a local small business or, you know, a multi-million-dollar conglomerate that wants a whole lot of dick and fart jokes in their advertisements and, like, weaseled in there, tell them to email me, pr0l3@thedevilsbench.com, or don't. We're going to podcast anyway.
This is a good tune. I like this.
This is a good tune, but it has the worst possible title.
Oh, God. Okay, give us a hint. Let's see if we can guess it. How many words?
Okay.
Just one. I'm guessing just one.
No, four words. Oh, it's such a good tune, too. It's a real shame. Four words. This could be either a really crappy emo band or... an equally crappy teen romance.
Oh, it's got to have the word all in there somewhere.
Nope, close though.
Every.
No.
All right.
Actually, it's not close at all. I don't know why I said
that.
Oh,
well, thanks. Yeah, you're right on the right track, except you're nowhere near it. Yeah.
This song is called Night of the Vampire from Technoax.
I can see it being a little vampire-y. But it reminds me more of when I was a kid and it was this time of year, because I loved this time of year as a kid.
Okay.
And then me and my buddy out in Mount Pleasant, drink a bunch of Jack Daniels, walk around the town we lived in at nighttime, because I was young enough that that was still cool, but old enough that I could drink. And we just go to the park at nighttime and everything seemed different. And you didn't even think about the fact that Stephen Hawking said that there's only about 1,000 more years left in humanity until we're good. You never thought about shit like that back then.
Yeah, no.
You didn't pay taxes. You didn't look outside at the night sky and see just a vast expanse of nothingness and realize at any moment, you can't hear my snap. Just blink out of existence. Never worried about that stuff. That's what this song reminds me of.
I found a new emo band that I've been listening to called Dance Gavin Dance.
Are there still new emo bands?
Yeah, for sure. Don't worry, I'll find them.
That's pretty sad.
And they got this song called Death of a Strawberry. I don't know why it's called that. But
because it's a ridiculous... let's come up with the stupidest thing we can think of.
The first line in it is, sick of being in my head and worried about my fate and thinking about my health. And they're all like 25, 26. And I was like, oh, I have those feels. I don't give a shit about relationships anymore. Yeah. Like old school emo when it was all like, she left me and I don't know what to do.
I like that song, has no impact who's going to pay my taxes? Or that's the one after Hydro's getting cut off.
That's a country song.
Adult emo. We should do that. We should make an emo band. It's all about adult shit.
What is your adult emo band name?
It's called My Coworkers Don't Respect Me. And our first album is called I'm Not Sure If My Friends Like Me Or Just Put Up With Me. And my hit single is going to be I'm Pretty Sure Everyone Else Here Makes More Money Than I Do. those are adult emo problems right there.
Yeah,
fuck,
really.
She's like somebody else. It's like, someone else just got promoted over me. You know, things like that. You're right, Jeremy. Like, country music is just adult emo.
Yep.
The country songs are an adult problem.
The dog dies, the wife leaves.
Yeah.
The truck breaks down.
Yeah. That old joke that if you play them backwards, it's the happiest song in the world.
That's still funny. Dog comes back, the wife comes back.
My name is Bill, otherwise known in online circles as Prol. You can't find me online very much anymore unless you get me on Facebook, so look me up or don't. Who are you?
I'm the guy who came unprepared with the smart-ass thing for his name, and he's just steering into the skid, because I am Skid Steerer McGee.
Okay.
See, I got a laugh out of you.
Our esteemed colleague this evening, a multiple comer backer on the podcast.
That should have been the name of that song.
Multiple comer backer?
That's right.
I think that's a porn, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that how you say that?
Is it childish if I laugh at it? Is it? Because I almost said it, and I'm glad I didn't. So now I look like the adult here.
I don't know if that's how you say it. Is that a porn? Like,
is that a porn?
Is that a... I don't
a porno?
How would you say it?
I don't know.
You have to conjugate that, I think.
Yeah.
Porno.
Now we're adults.
Conjugate the verb.
Officially. Jeremy, our house DM, the guy in charge of...
Isn't it house MD?
No.
That was a fucking great joke. I'm going to bask in the glory. That was a good joke. That was a damn good joke. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, internet, laughing along with me in the car.
MD probably gets paid more.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder what the disparity in incomes are between DMs and MDs.
Large.
A million. Yeah, large. Just very a million.
Large. Many zeros. Many zeros. You are our house DM, kind of, right? Like,
sure.
You're kind of running shit around
if
here.
That's what you want to call me?
Yeah. You know what? You know what I really like calling you?
Maybe.
Careful.
Yeah.
My wife is listening.
When I come in and do post-event and you're coming in to do D&D, or like we pass each other and there's people in the store.
They're like, yeah, you going to make some shit up tonight? Yeah, man, I made up a bunch of shit tonight. Awesome. Keep making shit up, dude. Yeah.
It's like if one black belt karate motherfucker walks past another one when they're in their gis and they greet each other as sensei. I like saying, what's going on, DM Jeremy? And he's like, not much. GM Bill, how you doing, homie? And he doesn't ever say that.
No.
But
are there gang signs in RPGs? Is there like RPG gang signs?
Yeah, they're secrets, so you can't, you know.
Oh, I'm
just saying.
We could tell
I'm
you.
A plebe.
We'd have to kill you.
That's right. Or your character, at least.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll just roll another character, bitch. Yeah. I came with three sheets.
It's there's like this echelon that you get to when you say, like... What's going on, DM Jeremy? And your whole table is like, oh, shit.
Do you think that would work anywhere else? Like, if you're out at a restaurant?
Definitely
somewhere?
Not. No. But let it be known that if I ever see this guy in a restaurant, I'd be like, DM Jeremy, what's up, bro? Like, that's just how it has to happen. So, what have you been doing with role-playing stuff here, role-playing stuff at home?
We're on a break here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I finished the campaign that we were running. It ended up being about 20 sessions.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Jesus.
It was a good time. And then we did a quick little thing for beginner players. It was just three sessions long. We got together and made characters, walked through different ways to make characters in Dungeons & Dragons, specifically the 5th edition, because that's sort of the new edition out that everybody wants to learn how to play. So... we did one night of making characters, then we did two nights of running through an adventure, and we took things nice and slow, and if people had questions, we did our best to answer those and move through that. And that was just a three-session deal. And then now we're on a bit of a hiatus. Maybe in the new year I'll be back in, start running something. I have a game that I'm running, well, two games that I'm involved in at home, but...
Are they both D&D, or...?
No, one's Hunter the Vigil.
Oh.
Which is a World of Darkness game. And I don't know if you've seen the show Supernatural, which might not be an appropriate comparison, but it's very similar in that you're a group of modern-day monster hunters.
Oh,
and,
neat.
Yeah, very good system. And World of Darkness has been around for a long time. They used to be White Wolf, and now I think they're owned by Onyx Publishing, I think. And... Yeah, it's a good game. I don't actually run that one. I get to play on that one. So.
Oh, that's always fun, right?
We should open up a service where, like, you go online. Like, if you're going on vacation somewhere, like, you go online and you can travel around. And then, like, people are hosting D&D games that you can join. We'll call it Air D&D.
Oh, right?
That's our million-dollar idea.
All right, let's pack it up and do it.
And we did it. Thanks, folks. Thanks for listening, Internet. Play the music.
That's always fun when you get to switch and be a player.
Yeah.
Because you're so used to orchestrating, you just get to like not stress and like have fun while you're playing.
I'm actually more at comfort behind the screen rather than having to pick like just one character to play.
Yeah.
And be like, this is all I am week in and week out. This is, I come to the, like, when you're DMing, you might have, you know, one week you get to play sort of a comedic character. The next week you're playing a more serious role with the group. So when you get locked into one as a player, that can be a bit restrictive. But so I get really comfortable behind the screen. That's where I am usually. So.
Yeah, I always look at that as like a double-edged sword. Is that at the same time, it sounds enticing to me to be in control of the story, but then at the same time, it sounds frightening to me to be responsible for the story. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be great.
The entertainment,
because,
really.
Yeah, because you can kind of draw it along in the way you want to see it, or if the characters are playing along, you're like, oh, what would happen if this happens? And you could make that happen. But then at the same time, if you're just sitting there and you're having like a brain fart or something like that, it's like, there's a goblin!
Yeah, the buffering wheel. You can see the buffering wheel in front of the DM when they're like, I didn't expect you to go left, so give me a second.
Yeah.
You know? I assume that... so what... Because I have my opinion of what I think the answer to this is, but what's more difficult as a DM? Is it when you have... Let's say you have a group of five or something like that, where you've got a group of people who are loose cannons and are doing everything outside of the story.
Like my group. My typical post-event group.
Yeah, they try to break everything. Yeah. or people who it's like, so what do you want to do? I'll wait a turn. You know?
Yeah.
Like, what's the people who are... loose cannons, or the people who don't give enough input? What's more challenging to deal with?
The second.
Yeah, I would say, because you can throw hooks at them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if somebody's not really... It's also the DM's job to involve every single person, and you're the controller of the spotlight as well, right?
Right.
So if I notice that somebody's not really participating, sometimes that's just as much fun. For them, their involvement is just playing with everybody.
Right.
And you get to kind of feel that out. But I'll throw, like, for example, one of my players is very regularly quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to know that his hook, the thing that gets him involved, is ethical dilemmas. So if I know that he's kind of fading and still might be engaged in that he's still paying attention and
just not participating.
Yeah, he's just not using his voice to play.
Mm-hmm.
Very simply, I'll just make him stumble upon some battered woman who's running away from a man. And then now all of a sudden he's got, you are directly involved. She fell into your arms. What are you going to do?
There's a lion and a hyena, and both of them are eating each other from the bottom up. Which one do you save?
There's a chicken, a fox, and an egg.
Yeah, and you got to get them across the goddamn lake.
Yeah, no, definitely. People that you can't get engaged, whether it's their... they could be like what Bill said, someone who just is there to go on the ride of the adventure and see what everybody else does. And you know, I had a player once that just loved to take notes, like would sit there and note keep the entire adventure.
That's me in the game. I mean, I interact, but... I'm a furious note keeper.
Yeah,
because I need to make sure I don't miss anything.
But if that's what you like, and you'll leave the interacting to the other characters. You just want to be there to sort of be a witness to the story,
mm-hmm.
and get involved on whatever level you're comfortable with. Because role playing games, there's certainly comfort levels that people have, as far as like how much they want to role play versus how much they. Are willing to just kind of how much they want to sit back. You know, there's some people that want to be right in the mix of everything, and there's other people that are just like, no, I'm willing to let the rest of the table run wild with this, and I'm going to take my notes, or I'm just going to enjoy what I'm seeing and hearing, and that's fine. But if you have a whole table of that,
mm-hmm.
then you need someone to step up. There's always like someone that you're hoping will step up as like the face of the group.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is the guy who's going to deal with the NPCs and get the ball rolling.
It's even better when there's two.
Yeah.
Pit them against each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's kind of like, it's almost like comedy in a way. Like if you're with a group of people and you're like, it's a funny group of people and you're trying to be funny, it's one of those things that if people aren't laughing or people aren't telling jokes or something, you might feel weird being the one who's so far away from the rest of the group, so you might bring yourself in. And then it's also, as the DM, it's kind of like an interviewer, right, where you got to be careful that your guest that you're interviewing doesn't just give you one-word answers to open questions, or at the same time doesn't just talk so much that it's completely just falls apart, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's got to be a fine balance to try. And that's the thing too to think about. Like, okay, if your kids are in school or your kids are in high school or you're in high school and you're just really, really up on your strengths and weaknesses for some reason. But it's like there's a lot of skills that you can build there that'll help you later in life, like presenting or creativity or taking cues or reading people and things like that. Those are all things that just passive skills or active skills that you pick up on and that you perfect while DMing.
There is a TED Talk of a guy that talks directly to that point, is that his geeky life that he's led, playing role-playing games, problem-solving, leading, all those skills that he's then pulled into his real life. It's a shorter TED Talk because some TED Talks can go on forever. And
yeah.
At least it feels that way. But I can't remember the guy's name, of course. But it was good. It was interesting to see that someone could take that and then relate it to real world stuff.
Totally. Because how often? So unless you're sitting down and you agree to play this type of game, how often do you have in your job or in your day to day the opportunity to sit down and solve problems with people and pick up on cues of people and like read people and stuff like that? How often do you get to do that? Because typically if you're working a job where you're not in business for yourself, you have a script to follow, you have a mandate to follow,
yeah,
you have a certain task to complete, or you work in something where you serve, like, you know, if you're at Tim Hortons, for instance, you don't have that much time between taking the order, taking the money, and seeing the next client to do anything like that. So really, where else do you get an opportunity to hone those skills unless you're already in a position where you need those skills?
Yeah. You know, this just popped into my brain. Going back like 2 points when Jeremy was saying that when you play the role of a player and you're not the DM, it's kind of a thing for you that you get locked into one role. The easy way to get around that is to make your character addicted to drugs.
Yeah. multiple personalities.
Or multiple personality, yeah.
The one guy did in our game.
Yeah, yeah,
Ian,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah, we were playing post-event, and then you'd just be sitting there, and Bill would be telling stories, and Ian's just sitting there, and then he picks up the dice, and he just looks at everybody, and he rolls. And then he's cool, and he just continues on. And then one time, Bill would be telling a story and putting the fluff in there and everything like that. Ian picks up the dice, rolls it, and he's just like, my guy goes insane and charges after the guard. And then you see Bill's eyebrows go up and just be like,
because he had some like built-in mechanic for himself where if a certain dice roll, then the other crazy personality takes over, right?
Oh, man. And that was such a cool concept because it added another layer, because every time he rolled the dice, everyone just went,
oh, yeah.
And then sometimes it hit and sometimes it didn't.
I'm
going to catch this fly, by the way. I'm going to get him.
Okay,
I believe. Mark my words.
I believe.
He's on the backside. He's on the dark side.
That's right.
I'm going to get him.
I ran a high fantasy game. And I built in a essentially like a class. So this version of high fantasy was in a world where magic was discovered but not understood. So every time you casted something, there was a real significant chance that you weren't going to be able to control it.
That sounds neat.
And likewise, every time you used a potion, you didn't really know what it was going to do. And so the people that were specifically interested in potion making were called brewmen, and it was their job to make potions and document the effects. But because they didn't really know the effects, whenever they took one, you never knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I injected this NPC where the first couple potions he took, like the first one turned him to stone, and then the second one, he was still stone, but his hair turned on fire. And then the third one, like, everybody inside a 6-foot radius could only see blue, you know, and it was just all this crazy stuff. And so it got to the point where they didn't want to let him take a potion unless he knew what it did. And then they understood that they kind of like made up this mechanic where every time he took a potion and snapped out of whatever the effect was, he would make a note in his notebook. So every time he's going to take a potion, they'd be like, no, is that in your notebook already? And then, you know, I'd make them roll, and yep, it's in the notebook. Well, what's it do? And I found this list on Reddit of potions that, like, were essentially potions for fun. there's just like crazy effects and stuff like that. I never made it useful in any regard.
Your D's become B's.
Yeah, like never healed anything, never did anything like that. They had another one where his feet started turning into roots, and the best one ever. Had six players. He drinks the potion. I said, roll a D6 and count out from my left-hand side. 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you very much. And for the rest of the game, he was gradually falling in love with that player. Until,
nice.
Like, he eventually, I think, gave his life and, like, stood in front of, like, an archer or something. No, take me! And it was this
big hilarious.
Thing. Hilarious. I had a question for the two of you.
Okay. I got a question for you, too.
All right. Well, do you want to have a question fight?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's see who looks the most inquisitive.
All right.
It's like a, what's it called? Zoolander stare off. We got the blue steel?
That's right.
Okay, wait. Let me ask mine first because it directly ties into potions.
Okay.
So I was going to ask you guys if you had gotten into anything recently that completely fascinates you. Because we did our little Benchcast book club, and I talked about the tree book and how that totally fascinated me, and I run through... Just like hobby ADD, I run into fascination ADD, where all of a sudden it's just like, I need to know absolutely everything
about a good one, yeah.
A useless fucking topic. Like, did you know that there's over 7,200 different kinds of mold or like something like that, right? So my latest thing and my latest Amazon purchase, it's all about cocktails.
Okay.
I
loved his smile when he said that.
Well, and the thing that's ridiculous about that is if you know me, I don't really drink at all. I have a nice bar that I've finally stocked up to serve people, but I never have anybody over. So
yeah.
I got drinks, and I don't drink, really. And I do it for hosting, and I never host anybody. So it's pretty ridiculous. But I had some cocktails at a restaurant that were just like, slam your hand on the table. I'm drinking love right now. Like, this is so good. So I got into like the whole like kind of like the alchemical idea of everything and like making potions. So I got a book that's all on growing your own herbs to make into bitters to use in drinks.
Oh, interesting.
And it's just like, what a fucking cool concept that is. So it's not because I'm into cooking and I grow my own herbs for cooking and stuff like that. But you grow some whatever the hell this is and you put it in the what the hell is it called. And then you let it sit there for a little bit. And yeah, now you can make your drinks taste like fucking root beer or something like that. So I ordered 4 books off of Amazon that all run the gamut on like making homemade bitters, not making homemade liquor because there's too many like equipment and utensils involved. This is just Bunsen burners and beaker jars and graduated cylinders, alcohol and herbs. So I'm stoked for that. I can't wait. And then when you were talking about the potion thing, I'm like, holy shit, I'm a brewman.
Yo, yeah, you're definitely a brewman.
I'll just grow a bunch of
I'm not
of
drinking
shit
anything
backyard.
You make until you drink it.
Because you know I'm going to show up at the bench every now and then with just this disgusting-looking concoction and be like, hey, Bill, take a sip of this.
I promise you won't go blind.
Yeah. You might fall in love with someone 4 people away from you.
So what's the question?
The question is, what have you gotten into recently that you're fascinated by? The latest fascination.
I know that there's like an actual term for what you're saying is like you find something and have to know everything about it.
Yeah. It's called having a job that you can't stand going to every day.
It's one of those stupid like terms. It's not really a word, but people say it. It's called infotainment.
Oh, I hate portmanteaus like that.
Yeah.
I hate that. Brangelina. I hate that shit.
What am I fascinated by recently? I'm really fascinated by Eastern philosophy and Eastern thinking and Eastern religion. That's what I'm fascinated by. Recently.
Eastern boys and Western girls?
No. I said that's Eastern
pretty fascinating song.
And Eastern thinking.
Look it up. It's a good song.
So what qualifies as Eastern? Are we talking about like Eastern Asia?
Yeah.
Like
Etobicoke.
Taoism. Buddhism.
Kingston.
Oshawa.
Yeah. Oshawa.
There's a rabbi in Oshawa.
I'm really
I
into
need to
what
go
they're
to
thinking
for...
in the Schwa.
In the Schwa.
No, like Taoism, Buddhism, all of that non-linear, non-binary kind of thing,
yeah.
Where it's all those weird, like, this is and is not kind of things. And to the tune of, like, I'm reading a three books right now on the Tao or Taoism. And I have to read, like, I can only read two pages or so because it's almost like I'm too dumb to understand, even though it's explained plainly.
Yeah, but that's not late reading.
No, and like I have to read two pages and then put it down and go away for a day or so and then like schedule myself a service call in North York. So I have like a good hour to think about this. And then I come back to it, read the same two pages, and I'm like, wait, okay, so the real Tao is not a Tao that can be named, but you call it the Tao.
Is it the Dow Jones?
No.
Dow Jones Industrial?
Stop it. Stop it. No.
So that, I think that's a, just a, like, I read Sun Tzu's Art of War and stuff like that because I thought it'd be, like, real deep and then stuff like that, and I'd get, like, ideas from it. I just think that's a product of living, like, 2,000 years ago when you didn't have, like, fucking running water and, like, jobs and shit. It was just, like, you just sat around in a cave and just came up with really poignant shit about rabbits and stuff like that. The wise rabbit looks into the sun in the morning.
It could
be. And the sun
be.
Looks into the rabbit at night. And you're just sitting there like, fuck, I can think about that for a little while.
What you don't know is you just blew someone's mind.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
The rabbit does look into the sun.
It's right.
It also could be people getting so high that they like tap into some other dimension of what's going on.
What
here.
If reality
is just where we are.
That's a cliffism right there.
That's a cliffism. That's honestly like, I guess, jujitsu, maybe? Taoism and jujitsu. Jujitsu is doing something very weird to my brain these days.
Is it the concussions?
No, it's just unlocking a part of my brain that was sitting in there and sedentary. And I'm discovering, here's a really weird thing that you're not allowed to say out loud. I really, really enjoy fighting people. And there's a release in that that I don't get anywhere else.
We should take a step back now.
And there's, no, I'm fucking terrible. All I do.
Oh, okay,
we'll stay where we are.
Yeah.
We'll
there's two of us, man.
I go there twice a week and get strangled by murderers. And because the way this class is like run, you roll everybody in the whole class. So, like, there's this dude there, Johnny. And this guy is, like, 265 pounds. He's a pro MMA fighter. And, he's so strong. I'm relatively stable. Not good, stable. As in, sometimes you can't flip me over when I'm in somebody's, side control on top. And, side control from, like, MMA.
That's a wicked name for, like, a punk band or something like that.
Side control?
Yeah.
This
just MMA-themed punk music.
Just, I have, like, hooks in. I'm in solid. And this guy just exhales with his hands on my hips and presses me off of his body. And as I'm being lifted off his body, he just takes his hand on the side of my head and thrusted it into the mat and then casually mounted me. That type of experience tells me I could be fucking murdered. I could be murdered by Johnny's bare hands. And there are dudes walking around the street because it's important because you get good at your job, you get good at the things you're doing well, and you start to build and build and build, and your chest pops out, and then before you know it, you're that fucking guy screaming at Tim Hortons because how dare you put a tomato on my turkey bacon club when I asked you not to. And you turn into that guy. I don't anymore because if Johnny's behind me in line, he'll choke me unconscious. Like, it's just, you get that, like, zoned into the frequency of, like, I could be fucking killed by somebody strangling me with his forearm.
You know what else is really fascinating? When, like, and I say this as a useless person, I'm of no substance to anyone other than maybe my, like, immediate, my wife and my dog and maybe you guys. But when useless people decide to take all that, like, frustration and energy out on, like, servers and stuff like that, like, as if the person at Tim Hortons or something like that is making the 11th bagel in the last 10 minutes or something like that, is trying to create you a fucking masterpiece and give a shit about, like, excuse me, I asked you to butter the top half and leave the bottom half completely unbuttered. There should be no top to bottom half contact. It's like when I do the coffee run at work, and then people, I'm like, hey, I'm going for a coffee run. Can I get you something? Yeah, can you get me, like, a French vanilla, but, like half French vanilla, half coffee, and then make it a double-double? And I just go, no, I can't. You know?
Yeah, I hate that. One of my earlier jobs, my dad is a funeral director, and I worked at his funeral home, and I would have to do lunch runs for everyone working that day, and I would get orders like that.
Yeah.
And, oh, I cannot stand.
Sorry, Steve, I'm not bringing you back a sandwich.
I cannot stand
that. Can you get me a half turkey bacon club and a half meatball sub? But, like, don't get them to cut it. Can you just put, like, a demilitarized zone across the bread where the marinara and the mayo don't mix? Absolutely not. Get your own fucking lunch.
Exactly.
Like, do you want a grilled cheese sandwich or do you want a cold cut?
If it's right there on the menu in black and white and you can just read it and go, that's acceptable. I don't mind getting anybody their lunch if that's what they're going to order.
I always know that I've reached, like, the critical mass point of coffee orders as soon as I need to write something down. If there's too many people or yours is too complicated, no, I'm done. Not taking any more orders. You know where the fucking Tim Horton is. Go get it yourself.
What have you been into, Jeremy?
What have I been into?
Interested by?
I discovered I am not a big reader. I don't know why, and that's maybe strange for somebody that, like, plays a lot of role-playing games because, like, there's so much source material. I can read that stuff, but I can't. If someone, like, were to drop a novel and say, hey, the story in here is fantastic, he's real. I can't do it. I can't.
Just driving down the street is like, yield for pedes ass, fuck it.
Screw it.
Ba-boom!
You know, it's funny you say that.
I'm not a reader.
In my driving, my very first driving test, I did pass, but the one question I got wrong was a stop sign question. I basically said you just yield. I kind of got in this habit. They did it with the, there were no computers, right? So there was a yes button and a no button, and I'd hit the one button too many times, and the stop sign question came up, and I was just like, yes. It's like you do, and the question was phrased something like, you know, you only stop if there's no one there.
And they gave you a license.
And I was just like, yes. Everything else I got right, but they still gave me a
always
license.
Pick C.
So anyways, I don't do a lot of reading. I do a lot of driving. It's 40 minutes down to work, 40 minutes back. We do a lot of trips down to McMaster for my daughter. So there's an almost an hour going to and from my in-laws again. Close to half an hour there, half an hour back. So I picked up one of these audiobooks.
Nice. I've always wondered whether they're worth it or not.
Some of them are amazing. Not all of them. Because, I mean, if you get a bad narrator, you've got that narrator through the whole book. And it's just horrible.
Gilbert Gottfried reads The Call of the Wild. So the wolves came in the forest. They're everywhere.
So I've now been listening to... have you heard Gilbert Godfrey do 50 Shades of Grey on YouTube?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my.
I might. Okay, find it.
You need to listen
God,
to it.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, man.
Is it actually him?
It is him.
Yeah. Oh,
it's him.
Shit, I can't wait.
And he does 50 Shades of Grey. And, yeah, so I've been listening to, let's see, I've caught up on a whole bunch of old school, like, D&D type books that I hadn't read from cover to cover, like the Dragonlance Chronicles, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but they're fantastic. And then I started listening to some alternative stuff that's not necessarily strictly like Dungeons and Dragons type fantasy. So I listened to Lovecraft stuff.
Oh, cool.
Very, very cool stuff. And then I listened to Neil Gaiman's...
who is that? I know who that
Neil
is.
Neil Gaiman wrote Sandman, which you might have read comic books. And I listened to his Neverwhere, which I really liked, which is sort of like this modern fairy tale, sort of like the world. Everybody goes through the world not realizing there's like a upside down. Well, upside down is Stranger Things, right? But sort of like another world beneath it. It's very cool. And then I listened to I got hooked on Neil Gaiman, and just listened to his American Gods, which I guess is coming out as a TV show. In the new year. So now I'm really looking forward to that. But, so I've been catching... There's all these books that I've always wanted to read. And now I'm utilizing audiobooks to, with all this driving I'm doing, to get them in.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. At least you're getting them in, right?
Yeah.
That way you can at least draw off of it the same way, you know, a lot of DMs do when they're reading. I kind of hear you, though. Like, it's almost like reading. I hate to say it this way, but especially at this specific stage in my life, reading takes up too much time.
Exactly. You've got a kid, right?
Yeah.
And you will soon be a dad. Am I right?
That's correct. Right?
And I have three. So between...
Guy's crazy.
Between my
job... What are you doing with your life, man?
Between my job, getting stuff done around the house, getting the kids to whatever they're doing and spending some time with them. Like, the idea to sit down and spend a couple hours reading a book, there's just...
Oh, you don't want to do that after you've already done all that?
Yeah, that is not an option. No? That is not
an option. You can't zone out and read a book because you have to not only move your eyes over the words, but you have to digest those words. But you can zone out and listen to an audiobook.
You can
zone out and listen to a podcast. So there's so many more opportunities for you in a day and longer to get that in. And driving's perfect for that because it's like you just sit there, like especially if you're like on the highway or something like that and you just got a straight shot, like you're just sitting there and your mind starts to drift anyways.
Yeah.
I was listening to that 4-hour long End of the World podcast live from the Comedy Store the night of the election. Yeah, so I'm on like, I think I'm in the third hour now, but since Monday, every time I drive to work, I've been listening to that like 35-minute blocks at a time.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
All right, I'm going to impregnate your mind with this because once you've heard it, you...
Oh, God.
You just...
No, it's really good.
I can't wait.
Presents 50 Shades of Grey, the erotic best-selling novel read by Gilbert Gottfried.
My inner goddess has stopped dancing and is staring too, open-mouthed and drooling slightly.
Hear it the way it was meant to be heard.
Keep still, he orders, and slowly he inserts his thumb inside me, rotating it around and around, stroking the front wall of my vagina. No fisting, you say. Anything else you object to? I agree to the fisting. I'd really like to claim your ass.
I want that to be my ringtone. Just over and over again. I agree to the fisting.
Oh,
do you think that's his real voice? Or is that... I mean, obviously...
Guaranteed. Gotta be.
You think so? I don't think
it's too consistent to be put on. It might be accentuated.
That's what I think it is. Like, I think it's like he turns it up a notch.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Chappelle can do that sometimes, right? Chappelle will turn on
the
Chappelle voice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's... That's gotta be all it is.
That guy's hilarious.
Oh,
it's
good.
I forgot. He had a podcast, but, like, and it could be really funny, but for, like, you'd get 10 episodes, and you get one that you would just, like, go back and listen to it again because it's so funny.
Yeah.
And then the next 9 episodes are just him, like, waxing poetic about Bela Lugosi for like, and it's just like, all right, we get it. We get it. Can you have someone funny on again, please? But his was pretty funny. I've really trimmed down my podcast menu. I mean, after listening to Bert Kreischer on Joe Rogan's, I might have to add his. That guy's hilarious.
Did you see Joe Rogan's Netflix special?
I did, yeah.
Very funny.
Yeah, that
very
was,
funny.
It was I thought pretty so good.
Too. Yeah, it, I like that.
You know what? I mean, Rogan's had a ton of specials, but I watched a couple of his specials, and like the older one where he had like the, I don't know, he was just dressed like a douchebag, and he had that weird little hat on. It's one of the only other ones on the Canadian Netflix.
Yeah.
I watched it, and I'm like, I appreciate that that's comical, but I just didn't find it funny. And then I found his new one funny. It's just funny how that happens.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens.
I loved Eliza Schlesinger's first special, War Paint. Like, that one I watched 3 or 4 times because it was funny every time I watched it.
I didn't like her last one.
And then I watched Freezing Hot, and it wasn't, I had turned it off. It wasn't funny.
Yeah.
And then Bo Burnham, like, his special What? Like, I remember when I first watched that, it was so...
I remember when you first watched that, too.
It was so off the wall, like, because I always say, like, the type of comedy that makes me laugh out loud, I can't see the joke coming. It has to be off the wall. And that's exactly what that was for me. And then I was super excited for his next special. And there's some funny stuff in it, but on the whole, it wasn't very good. And it's just weird, eh? Is that a me as the digester of the content just expecting it to be better than the first? Or is that just, it just didn't hit with me? It just wasn't objectively as good?
I think comics have just, like, some of their material it comes at the right time in your life that it's applicable and you can totally, like, I'm not a big fan of Dana Carvey, but he has a special on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, I saw that,
I haven't seen that one either.
And I thought, okay, I'm going to check it out. Because I've been checking out a lot of Netflix. They've got some sort of thing of comedy specials just pouring out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I checked out the Dana Carvey one, and I just... hilarious. And I'm not at all a Dana Carvey fan. And I mean, what was that one movie? It was like The Master of Disguise or something. Like with the turtle.
Oh, that was cringeworthy.
There's very small parts of laughter in that. Like, I get a kick out of very small parts of that movie. But as a whole,
the whole movie
just
didn't connect.
Oh, my God.
Me.
I mean, you had a couple funny skits and then you tried to piece them all together and it just didn't
work.
Yeah,
it's like, we got about 11 minutes of funny. Do you think we can stretch it into an hour 45?
Yeah.
Let's try.
Let's give it a shot if you're paying. But no, it's the comedy special I really liked.
You know who's the only one, the only two I can think of that have never missed for me have been Daniel Tosh and Bill Burr.
What about Louis C.K.?
Louis C.K., definitely. I missed him. Yeah, I have never watched a comedy special.
Bill Burr, for sure. God,
that didn't get me.
He killed at the Comedy Store.
He's funny, man. And you know what? Tony Hinchcliffe is really hilarious, and I love Tony Hinchcliffe. Like, I haven't seen any of his specials or anything. I just hear him on the Rogan podcast. And conversationally, he's really funny because, you know, on podcasts like this, you don't really tell jokes, right? But it's funny when someone makes a bad joke because he made a couple that just didn't hit. Right?
Yeah.
And there was a million people on stage. But it makes you realize it's like, oh, they're human. And he's probably in his head right now being like, oh, that didn't hit. Shit, I better be careful. Because I do that. Like, I don't consider myself a comedian, but I mean, my goal is to make everyone around me laugh all the time.
What I can tell you is from that little crew, like from that, you know, SoCal Joe Rogan crew of comedians.
Yeah.
Oh my God, finally. Joey Coco Diaz is putting out a special.
Oh, exactly.
He doesn't, like,
he's
has little
hilarious.
Bits that you see on YouTube and stuff. I can't wait for his special.
He's hilarious. Yeah, it's funny, man. Like, when you tell a joke or something, and especially one that you got it planned, because most of the time, at least for myself, when I try to say funny things that I think my friends will find funny, you don't think about it. But when you have one that you plan and you say it and it just falls flat, oh, that's such a lonely feeling.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a lonely feeling. Because you're sitting there with, like, the look that you're proud of yourself and nobody gets it. Or they get it and it's just not funny.
Yeah.
And then when
just,
I heard...
Just turn it on. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard Tony Hinchcliffe make one.
I just slayed with
and
that.
And I'm like, I know what that feels like, but not nearly on that same stage. I could only imagine.
Oh, because then you're not doing it just in front of your buddies. Now you're doing it in front of people who are there to judge your funny
and
quality.
Probably paid.
But
probably
at the same time, it's like, oh, it's like those shitty tabloid things. It's like, celebrities are just like us. When you hear, like, the comedian fall flat, you're like, oh, it's okay. It's okay.
Russell Peters in his last one, I don't know if you saw that, but I felt he fell flat on a couple, and he's like,
he's good at recovering from them, man.
He is. He is. But I was like, wow, that's not the Russell Peters that I remember.
I think
never found that guy funny.
I
hear his early stuff, I think, is really good because I feel like he was still edgy with, like, because everything, his whole shtick is race.
Yeah.
But, and his early stuff, I think he really cut with it. Like, it was like he was really drawing on some stereotypes that, just it's not PC to talk about or to act that way. And I think that's where his laughs came from.
But I think it just got tired, right? Because he's done it before. So you have to abandon your old stuff because otherwise people will come see you and be like, oh, he told the same fucking... It's like if you went to see a band that always played the same songs, right?
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, okay, well, I mean, there's some classics. But at the same time, if he always tells the same jokes all the time, it's like, oh, I've already heard this.
Yeah, I hear that. I mean, I don't know... I can't remember who it was. I was just talking to somebody about the Dave Chappelle special For What It's Worth. That and his other one, I can't remember what it's called. I have seen those specials probably 50 times over. Like, they're my favorite comedy specials of all time.
That used to put me to sleep. I'd just throw on. I used to have a VCR and I'd tape the Comedy Now specials.
Yeah.
And then I'd just listen to stand-up comedy because it would put me to sleep. It shut my brain off.
And, like, I was just talking to somebody who kind of looked at me like, really? Dave Chappelle? I was like, oh, he's a king.
He's hilarious.
A king. What are you talking about, Dave Chappelle? ?
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, man. Oh, yeah, you had a question.
I got a question. God,
Let me hijack the show again. So what's your favorite ice cream toppings, guys?
And actually, this is perfect because if we're on time here, this will, in a very roundabout way with zero segue, maybe this is the segue, this will bring us back to role-playing. So my question, specifically to fire this between the two of you as experienced DM and less than experienced player, you guys are at separate ends of separate spectrums. I'm rewriting a good portion of the rules for post-event, and I'm going to do like a second edition. And in that second edition, I am playing with the idea of making like a module or an optional rule set for specific movement rules. So the way post-event works currently, it's super story-heavy. And so, like, you know that if you say, you know, we walked down a path, blah, 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 I say, blah, 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 there's a barn. And you say, well, I approached the barn. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a guy out front of the barn. Well, I approached the guy. I'm not asking you for how many feet away are you,
yeah,
unless I ask you.
Yeah.
Or, like, I might say, for example, if I have a group that's wandering through a passageway, I'll say, who's the first person to go around the corner? Or in the case where two or three campaigns ago, they exited an elevator, and I said, who's the last person in line? And that creates this, like, oh, fuck, I don't want to be the last person in line. And everybody, like, rolls for it. I just found out about isometric paper so that you can draw, like, isometric cities and dungeons and stuff. It's in the style of Diablo. So it shows you, I guess, two sides of every building. And I'm not very good at it, but I think I could be. And, like, for drawing drawing out scenarios or drawing out terrain and land features and stuff like that, I've always liked it better when I can draw that than my top-down style. My top-down style is just, like, stupid blocks, and it's just shitty. And so I was thinking about a way that, like, how could we take isometric paper and maybe make this little town or make a room that you have to walk inside of and then use the actual squares and have my players play out, or even on a larger, you know, table-sized piece of paper with actual minis, the way D&D and Pathfinder works and all that kind of stuff. And if I could find a way to make super trimmed down movement rules, the question is, am I wasting focus on movement rules? Are they that integral to role play?
So I'll go first because I'll have the least poignant things to say. When I've played post-event or even Welcome to Hallbrook and things like that, which we need to get on again.
No shit. I'm going to, I personally am blaming it on Cameron.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Cam, because he's not here.
Yeah,
thanks,
it's the easiest way.
Yeah. But I've noticed, like, yeah, and even in the post-event when I did go into the barn and found that ridiculous, ridiculous sight that maybe we'll share, but I don't want to ruin it in case it's part of your campaign. But yeah, so
no, you can go ahead. That campaign's long gone because too many people know about it.
I'll tell it afterwards.
Yeah.
yeah, so I never considered that, but at the same time, what you'd always do is I would say, I'm going to here. And then you would be like, okay. And then you'd ask somebody else something. So I felt like I was waiting in between making the decision on where I was going and then interacting. So I always felt like it was real time. Like, I never felt like it was turn-based, or I always felt like it was real time and
that's
everything like
that.
That's
what I'm afraid of, turns.
Well, because that's when I hear you say movement and things like that, I think of XCOM, where it's like you get to move on your turn, and when the aliens move, it's hidden movement.
Yeah.
And you just wait, right?
That's where I kind of am right now.
Yeah.
I would hazard a guess that Jeremy will feel differently about that.
Yeah, because you've done a good job, and it's up to the DM, right? And if you're a weak DM or you're not sure what the rules are and you don't feel confident, maybe there's room to fall apart there. That's the thing. Post-event's so loose, there's room for it to fall apart.
I think that's what I'm leaning towards, is that no movement rules, but like a section on how to GM this game.
Yeah, because like you said, just as a module, right? Like,
yeah.
So just do a little thing where you talk about that and basically explain just that. A player decides that he wants to travel to an area that's, you know, so if I decide, we're playing right now, and I decided I wanted to go cross the street I wanted to go to Maria's, and then Jeremy wanted to go to the counter. Well, you would say to Jeremy, okay, your character walks to the counter, and then wait for him to do whatever he's doing, and then you'd go back to me. So it felt like time had passed. You know what I mean? You wouldn't say, okay, what are you doing? I'm going to Maria's. Great. So you walk across the street, and then meanwhile, Jeremy's still sitting at the table, right? You've done a good job, at least what I've noticed, of doing the short actions first, so it feels like there's time in between the longer actions.
Right.
But I've only played two campaigns.
Thoughts on movement? Is it required in roleplay?
No. No.
Yeah, I was right. So. I knew it.
I'm gonna tell you what it is. My least favorite gaming experiences came during 4th edition. 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons, where the map and the movement on the map became integral to the game. And it pulls away everything else. I'm not specifically immersion. And I'm not one of these DMs that like pushes like, we're going to have lots of immersion. People are just going to lose themselves in the game. I mean, the reality of it is that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You're playing, wherever you're playing, there's other stuff going on. Whether it's here at the bench, there's people moving around you. Even if you're at like a home game, there's going to be a limited amount of immersion regardless. But my from what I know of post-event, I feel like that you've set it up in such a way that it's story-driven. I know you use a lot of props and things like that. I think a detailed map on the table is going to draw away from that. Dungeons and Dragons comes from a place where it was like, it was based on a tactical game and mapping. I've done a lot of like research on early D&D just because I'm a geek and I like that sort of thing, but like that game came out of miniature war games. So
I didn't know that. It totally makes sense, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, even early versions of Dungeons & Dragons, your character's movement and all that is marked off in inches. Like in first edition Dungeons & Dragons,
really?
A human moves like 12 inches on his turn. And it's because it's based off of those miniature war games that they're playing. And Gary Gygax, who created the game, was a huge war gamer. And he just took that up a notch for Dungeons & Dragons in that now rather than focusing on entire units, we're just going to focus on one individual on that battlefield and what are they doing. So I think that Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder's even more so, have this crutch of mapping. So maps are valuable. So, but I say all this, and you know for a fact, like I do maps for my games.
Yeah, yeah. Dynamite maps with like watercolor paint. And like
that is not, so I draw, and my wife is an art teacher, so she gets in with her watercolors and goes crazy on them.
Ah, respect lost. Yeah. You see, I thought, meanwhile,
I am not doing all that great coloring. That is totally her. I draw the map, but from there, like I go here, make it look awesome now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, she does a great job, man.
Yeah, thank you. And I love what she does. And but what I use those maps for is just so players can keep track of sort of where they are in relationship to everything else. Because in fantasy games, you know, you storm them with a horde of goblins or orcs and that, and it can get a little confusing. And then people are asking questions. Somebody dies, and then they're saying, "Well, I wasn't there. I told you I'd meet my character back there." So that's what I use the map for.
I see.
But in, like I mentioned, I play in a Hunter the Vigil game. There's no mapping in that because it's story driven. And I feel like your post event is a more story driven game, and
totally.
It certainly has a certain feel being a post apocalyptic game. I don't want to say horror, but there's certainly tension and
totally.
Because horror is such a hard thing to do at a gaming table. You can install paranoia and tension at the table, but nobody's going to actually... Well, I've never experienced a player break down in total fear of something that's been going on at the table.
No.
But people...
You're not trying hard enough.
Yeah, no kidding.
Doing it wrong.
Suck it up.
Just lean over. Yeah, your character takes 3 piercing damage.
He's crying. Oh, man.
So welcome to Jeremy's Games.
I don't know. If you're finding in your post-event games that people are having a hard time keeping track of like positioning and things like that.
Not at all.
But that type of a game doesn't strike me as something that where positioning is important.
Yeah.
And if you're more involved in the narrative, like if you go, I want to run a four-session game, and at the end of that four sessions, I want to have told the following story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might be able to put a map down and go, this is what the barn looks like. And use those maps that you're talking about, the 3D maps. Incidentally, there was a Kickstarter not long ago. It still might be going for a program to build those maps.
Oh, my. That's something I would actually kickstart. Fuck drawing.
I don't know, though. I think it's sort of fantasy themed. I don't know if it would have the right sort of look for what you're talking about. But I feel like you could still do maps like that to sort of say, here's the layout of the barn or here's the layout of the house. I think that would be interesting. But I don't know, like I don't see, because then all of a sudden there's the need for minis.
Yeah.
And there are players, just like we talked about before, there's players that want to sit back and just kind of watch the game unfold, right? Mm-hmm. There are players that really get a kick out of breaking out the minis and putting them down on the table. Like I have Dwarf Forge dungeons, so they're like 3D resin dungeon tiles. So I can set up a whole dungeon in three dimensions and put the miniatures into it.
Cool.
It's great. It's awesome stuff. But there's a time, there's time involved in setting it up.
Yeah.
And some players are really going to feed off it, but I have other players that they would rather narrate what their character does.
Yeah.
On their
right.
turn. And the map is just like a reminder. Oh, this is sort of how I see it laid out. And that's all it's there for.
Like I use a whiteboard to do that currently,
yeah.
and like I'll explain what you're seeing. But for example, we had like a storm the gate essentially thing that happened, mm-hmm. and the characters were armed with simple firearms, and they were fighting a group with simple firearms, and there's like cars strewn about and fencing and all this kind of thing. And so one of the players says, "Well, I'm going to look for some cover. There's cover all over the place." Roll me on your age plus any skill that you have that would help you bound to cover,
mm-hmm.
and beat an 11 and you're in cover. And so that's what I've done so far, and it's worked perfectly.
But see, even from your description there, okay, let's just go from your description. So you talked about cars, you talked about broken fencing and things like this, okay? If you describe that and then lay down a map, it's very obvious. Okay, here, I've drawn a car here, I've got a bit of fencing here.
Yeah.
The players then... they're looking to that map, oh, I can't get to the car, or oh, I can't get to the fencing. But let's say narratively, the player says to you, I want my guy to run over and slide behind that car, and like he's having a breakdown, and I want him to sort of just like curl up in the fetal position behind the car. On the map, all of a sudden, he can't do what he's telling you, but narratively, you want that to happen.
Yeah.
The map is then being, it's getting in the way mm-hmm. of the narrative. So And Dungeons & Dragons isn't, to like throw it to the other side, Dungeons & Dragons is not necessarily meant to be played that way. Like Dungeons & Dragons in its sort of base, here you go, here's how you play Dungeons & Dragons, sort of like a dungeon crawling, monster slaying. I don't know if you've heard the term murder hobo.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's sort of like we're just adventurers looking for quests and we go out and fight monsters. Not all Dungeons & Dragons is played that way. But there's still a hint of it at some point. At some point, you're storming a dungeon, storming a castle, storming a town, and there's fighting, and the map is used to facilitate that.
Yeah.
But I feel like in post-event, the combat is just... you're telling a story. If no combat occurs during the entire story, then that's fine.
Yeah.
If no combat occurred in a Dungeons & Dragons adventure... some players might be okay with that, but I would say the majority of people playing Dungeons & Dragons, they're there to kill monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't get the opportunity, it's a problem. So like that example that I said, the guy wants to run behind the car and go in a fetal, and he's calling out for his mommy or his wife or whatever the case is, the map all of a sudden restricts that from being able to happen. I mean,
yeah.
Of course, as a GM, you can go, no, that's fine. You make it to the car anyways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The other thing is the characters will only pull on what you give them in the map. So
that's true too.
Like a character might come, you mentioned like zany guys that are just like, they come up with crazy things that like, what if one of them goes like, is there any down hydro lines? Well, if the map doesn't have a down hydro line, believe it or not, your players probably won't ask you if there's one there.
That's a good point,
but
too.
But if there's no map there, and the player goes, hey, is there any down hydro lines? Like, I have this idea, but I need a lot of electricity to do it. The DM on the fly goes, yeah, there's a down hydro line.
Yeah, sure there is. Yeah. Let's do it.
Because you want to see where it goes.
Yeah.
And you want to, you know, from a game standpoint, you want to reward the character for creating thinking creatively.
Mm-hmm.
And I find maps, like, if I don't draw a rubble on a map, no one will pick up a rock and throw it.
Well, and that way, too, like, you kind of share the experience of creating the world itself. It's mm-hmm. not just this, like, one-way dynamic kind of thing. Like, in that example, the guy who says, is there any downed hydro lines? Of course, I'm going to be like, yeah, there totally is. They're all over the place. What do you need?
Yeah, what do you want to do with them?
Yeah.
I find that with, Welcome to Hallbrook and the post-event I've played, where it gets me... I like being forced to think because it allows me to ask you questions. So if you've listened to Hallbrook, you'll see me asking all kinds of questions that seem really... it's like, yeah, where are you going with this, right? But I have to ask you multiple questions. So it's like, okay, I ask you what's the distance between me and what's this guy. So in that way, you tell me according to what makes sense for the story, right?
Yeah.
Rather than you asking me and then I say something and it makes you have to change it. Because when it comes to distance and things like that, if that's what's making you question this is distance and things. So let's say we're in this room right now. So if you've been to the bench, great. This will be great. If you haven't been,
you're going to practice
here. Get DMing. Here, so... we're doing a GM thing. So I'm GMing, right? And I tell you that you guys are in the room and then an event happens. It doesn't matter whether you're near the door or near the freezer or near the microwave, you're in the room and whatever the event happens, you think isn't, there's not really going to be any event that's going to occur that's so specific to the regionality of the room that where you're placed in it depends on, unless like, who's the last one to exit the elevator? That makes sense. But if I said the two of you are up at the bench talking to Curly, and then a car drives through the window, Jeremy's not going to say, well, yeah, but like the angle the car entered in, I'm 7 inches to the right far enough that it would only be a glancing blow. I mean, if you have somebody like that in your group, roll a d20.
Kill them off.
Yeah. 19 or lower, you die from fear or something.
But even if you don't have... Okay, so... Let's say you've got a map of the bench drawn out, so it's very obvious where people are. Okay, they can only act from where they are.
Mm-hmm.
But if you described, I don't know, two gunmen enter the front door, what do you do? Okay, so player B says, well, I have the, maybe if I could, like, you know, grab one of the coffee urns, I could throw hot coffee on them. On a map,
you can only move 12 inches per turn, and you're 17 inches away. I'd get bored instantly.
Even on the map, you when you place your piece, you're not near the coffee, but you had this idea for the coffee urn,
right?
And I know this is maybe a lame example, but what I'm saying is, if you're not on a map, you're just in the bench.
Yeah,
yeah.
Then narratively, you can say, well, I'm going to reach behind my back. I'm going to grab the coffee. And when he approaches me, I'm going to throw hot coffee on him.
Mm-hmm.
On a map, that player might not have had that option because, oh, shit, I'm on the other side of the room. The coffee's over there.
It's almost like the map is a crutch. And if you give a crutch to somebody who can't walk, it helps them walking. But if you give a pair of crutches to someone who's already running at full speed, it gets clunky. So it's one of those things where there's a purpose for it at certain times.
That's the way I was leaning to begin with. Yeah. And it's just like I wanted to pass by a couple guys who would have definitely like different experiences, but both have experience in RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Because anytime you put stuff like this on Reddit or like...
all of a sudden, don't you already know?
Why are you even writing your own game? Like you should just be playing...
Yeah, I hate Reddit.
I have a... there's a... new system called the Cypher System by Monty Cook Games, which I have a copy at home and I'll bring it for you. They deal with range very differently too. They just define zones. So are you at what the DM would say, you're at short range.
That's what I do for combat.
That's what you do, short and long.
You're at long range and you are at, there's three ranges and I'm right now I'm not remembering what, because I haven't had a chance to play the game yet, but I know that there's three ranges, and like on your turn you can shift from one of these range zones to the next one, and from one of these range zones to the next one, so that if you were at medium range, you're now at short range, and if you were at short range you can move out into the medium range, and it's very, and then rather than mapping, you can just have, you know, a couple square pieces of paper on the table. Put your bad guy on one. Mm-hmm. So anybody in the melee range, just put yourself on that square. I'm not saying where, like, that square is the entire room.
Yeah.
I'm not saying where you are in that room, but you're in what's considered short range. And then everybody who's standing out on the street, you're in this range increment. So just put your piece there on that, just so we know we can keep straight. Because if that's the problem, if you're just having, if tracking characters' positioning is an issue, which can be in bigger, with a bigger group, and if there's lots going on, that is, again, that's sort of like, it's not a so detailed a map that you're, that the characters aren't allowed to use creativity to create what's there or what they can interact with.
Yeah.
But it's at least giving them positioning enough that, no, if I want to use my, if I want to hit them with my baseball bat, I have to move in closer. If I want to shoot my gun, I'm still too far away, you know, that sort of
thing. Yeah.
Because I think that's happened at some points where, yeah, we were too far out of range for a specific weapon or something to work. Because, I mean, that's the thing. I bet if you asked your players, you know, what do you guys want more of? I'm sure they're not going to go, restrictions!
Yeah.
So, but, like we talked about earlier, if you have one of those people that it's like, they need the ladder rungs put really close together to help them get up,
yeah, no,
you have that option to insert those extra rungs.
There's some players that are going to enjoy a map.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tactical.
Yeah.
And if they have really, like Pathfinder, for example, has really defined rules for how and what you can do on that map and how you can move, what you can move through.
Yeah, I'm not interested in that.
That,
yeah.
I'm over Pathfinder. But
yeah,
it does, but there are people that like it, and it, and it's because they like that tactical side.
Sure.
It's all, and it's also, if you're a board gamer, maybe you can relate easier with that map there like that. But
yeah.
But I find a lot of the storytelling games that I play, White Wolf games being an example, This game that I mentioned, the Cypher system, which supports a number of different types of games. They're both storyteller based. They're not using maps.
Yeah, that's the whole idea for like movement, turn taking, combat for post event. Sparked in my head when I was playing Flames of War.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tabletop war game. And I couldn't wrap my head around. Curly was trying to explain the rules for combat to me about you can't shoot through an enemy unit, but you can shoot through a friendly unit. And I was like, well, why?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole premise behind it is this tabletop war game experience is happening in real time. So when your guys are taking aim in front of them, if there's units in front of them, they're starting to get down, and they're like, they're cognizant of the fact that guys are shooting behind them. So they're moving out of the way, and they're skirting, and they're doing this, that, and the other thing. And I guess once it clicked in my brain that it's all happening all at once, I was like, oh, that'd be really cool in an RPG. Instead of, because what used to drive me fucking crazy about D&D, even when we played a trimmed down version of D&D, Curly was GMing over MSN Messenger. That trimmed down. It still drove me nuts when it was my wife's turn. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I have some shit I want to do.
And I feel like it's going real time when we play post event.
Yeah.
Even if you leave me and you move on to the next person, I still feel like everything's happening real time,
you,
right?
You could try like a neutral initiative so that it's not so much that people are taking turns. Everything's going to happen simultaneously. So go around the table and ask everyone to declare what their intention is. You as a GM decide what the enemy or the opponent is doing this turn. And then once you've decided on that, don't change it. Then go around the table and ask everyone else to give an action that they're doing so that they don't know, you know, they don't know how the battlefield's going to change. But this is what their character, from just like the snapshot of what's happening right now, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And then you could still roll an initiative just to sort of run through how like who reacts the quickest, but you just run through everyone's actions and let them trigger all at once. And then the next round, it starts all over again like that. Like, I've seen systems that do stuff like that, where it's not like it's your turn. It's just like you go around the table quickly. I mean, you're still going to have a turn in that everyone needs an opportunity to contribute what they want their character to do. But if it's like, well, I feel like my character is just kind of standing there while he's doing this and he's doing that, you could just say, look, it's all going to happen at the same time. So you tell me this round, like, what is your intention?
Yeah. What I do right now is, I think, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, what I have to do is write essentially like a quick guide for a GM, like how do you run this game? Because initiative right now, the way I explain it, I don't know what particular words, it's very intentionally written to explain myself, but in lay terms or in casual terms, initiative is handled in a way that makes sense to the story. So if you're fighting some guy and you rush him, your action is taking place right now. What's everybody else doing? And then we'll come back to your combat. You roll to hit, he rolls to defend. Dick-a-da-day, you do whatever you're doing. You missed, well, you were just about to do this, and he's taking a swing at you. So if you crit fail and he misses, you could hit either one of them.
One thing that
it's just this.
Yeah, one thing I like about it as a player is that I think if there's a turn, then you can get a little complacent and then be like, oh, okay, well, it's not my turn for three more turns. Or, oh, okay, on my turn, I am going to do this because I am going to get a turn.
Yeah.
And what you do sometimes that I like is you'll ask me a question. Okay, so you walk into the building, and then two of the guards see you, and they say, put your hands up. What do you do? He's walking towards you, and he says, again, put your hands up. I mean, does he have a, now they both look at you. So then you get to speed it up, and then I'm like, and it actually makes you feel tense, and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
and then at the same time is that if that's not occurring and the opposite is occurring, you're like, okay, I am going to swing at this guy. And then you ask somebody else, what are you doing? Now you get to think a little bit. So
yeah.
It gives you control over taking away the agency of your player from making a decision and creates real tension.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, it gives me an opportunity to be like, ah, okay, I know exactly what I'm going to do because I don't have to go again in two moves.
Well, I'm convinced.
What you're describing is, I mean, that can still be done with any sort of, like, to go back to D&D just because it's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
That can be done with Dungeons & Dragons. I've been at a table with a DM that when it's your turn, if you're not giving him immediately what you're doing, he's just moving on to the next person. He gives you maybe 3-4 seconds, okay, on. Or in a situation like that where you're creating tension, like he's walking towards the guy, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? And you're flustering the player, and you just use that as a role-playing opportunity and go with it. That doesn't have to necessarily... I think that's very difficult to build into a set of rules the nice thing about rules is that it gives everybody at the table a set of framework to play by.
It's almost like what you can't do.
Yeah.
Instead of what you can do.
Because, like, this is one of... I've been with DMs that when I played a lot more, I had my DM was big on house rules. And I would always have arguments with him over house rules because it was fine to say, well, it's in the binder. But you know what? I don't read I have the player's handbook here. These are the rules. This is sort of how I believe my character interacts with the world based on these rules.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine to say you've got these house rules that override, but as a player, did I have access to them all the time? And you're still going back to core in the rules. It says this. Well, that's fine. We house rule otherwise. You know, players have to be so. If they know the framework, they're going to react and interact with the game better. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to go too wishy-washy, I think, with the initiative rules or the turn-taking rules, because then the player loses, like, the experienced player that's used to the system or someone that's familiar with you as a GM goes, I get it. I get what Bill's getting at here. But the noob that just picked up post-event and wants to run it with his buddies, if that's what you're going for. If someone can just pick that up and give it a go, I think the framework needs to be there. If you don't necessarily use that framework all the time in your games because you want to push narrative harder, that's fine. But I think the framework has to be there.
You have to give the GM the tools because you already have the tools to make up for where the rules don't exist because the game came from your brain. But if you're downloading that into your brain and you don't have your existing tools, you may not have the patience to make them up yourself or make.
And that's
kind of
what I'm going for, like with writing it again, because like I'm gonna do like some actual artwork and like try and make a go of putting a game out kind of thing, and Yeah, I think that's what I was getting at, and that's what brought on the whole conversation. And
so here's my question for you now.
Yeah.
So because I tried my hand at game design a long time ago, and I realized that I'm just reinventing a wheel that's already been built.
Yep.
So why not, with all the baseline systems that are out there that don't have, like, Dungeons and Dragons is not a baseline system. Dungeons and Dragons is a game that gives you sort of a intended playing world with its rules,
mm-hmm.
right? There's elves, there's dwarves, all that stuff is built in. So it's I realized that, like, well, I run Forgotten Realms, I run Greyhawk, I run my own homebrew world. I get that. That's different. But still the basics are there. Fantasy races, fantasy classes, fantasy world. I'm talking about a system that doesn't do that. There are systems out there that are just baseline rules. This is how you could run a role-playing game. However you want to do it. You want to put this into superhero games, you can put it in a superhero game. You want to put it into a apocalyptic. So, is there something about developing the rule system that... I guess what I'm saying is, why not... You seem to have a really good idea of what a post-event campaign looks or feels like.
Mm-hmm.
So you've certainly got all the fluff there. It's just a matter of finding a system that you go, this system works for what I want it to do.
The system as is written entirely. Like, every conflict can be solved, and the base is there for creating characters and, like, the works.
Okay.
As a standalone system, I think it works. For the why, purely because it's a creative exercise.
Okay, fair enough.
I am definitely not so jaded to think that this will be a career path, because I've unfortunately, like, talked to some guys online, and we'd, like, share rules and say, hey, can you look at mine? I'll look at yours, that kind of thing. And there's some guys out there that have dog shit systems. Mine might be dog shit. I just like it. It's fun. I like doing it. I like the creative process. But there's some guys out there that have dog shit systems that think that, you know, this is going to be a day job quitter.
One. Yeah.
You know, and when it really boils down to it, it becomes one of those, it's a lot like this podcast.
Are you saying this podcast is dog shit?
We It's, we have a pretty steady listenership, but I also know that we're not on the fast track to become the next Joe Rogan Experience. If I could get that much creative satisfaction, because I've always said you can't be an artist without an audience. So if I could get, like, the measure of success for this thing would be the third circle, the third social circle, where somebody I don't know and somebody who doesn't know anybody that I know picks up the game and thinks it's awesome. And if, hey, fuck it. Ultimately, end of the day, I want this to be something that I could, like, successfully play with my son and his friends and not have to, like, learn Mouse Guard or something like that, but that I could just, like, drop into Mouse Guard world and have it be super simple, no stat checking, you know, that kind of shit. In any case, thank you both for your input, because I was totally right. No, it just, you know what I mean, though? You kind of, I was like, okay, I'm going to make a run of this thing. Instead of, like, I self-published through Lulu, and it's, like, as is, a little 40-page core rule book that totally works. Says me, anyway.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it every time I've played it. And then from the sounds of it, I think, because I haven't played any of the other D&D stuff, it sounds to me like I appreciate how loose it is. Because all the other stuff feels too restrictive to me. Like, when I hear humans move 12 inches on their turn, I'm like, ugh. You know, like, no, I'm not to say that wouldn't be fun or couldn't be fun. Depends on your GM. But it doesn't sound like, oh, yay, to me. That sounds...
You know what? That is the make and break point.
Yeah.
You can play a horrible system. I used to play a lot of Palladium. Palladium is a heavy, just redundant system. But I had a great GM.
Mm-hmm. That's all that makes all the difference.
And that's all that mattered. I mean, that's what made the nights fun.
You could have a great system and a lousy GM. you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, if people are having fun with post-event, and I'm not trying to put down the rules, but a lot of the reason is probably Bill.
Yeah, what can I say?
Yeah.
It is, though. I mean, and that's what I was trying to say, too, is that if you have the flesh to fill in the bones in your head already, you have to realize that the other people may not. So if you can... You can skip some bones because you know where the problem would be. But if you are that third social circle person picking it up and be like, okay, well, how the hell do I know how to handle distance? You already know how to handle distance because you created it.
So
right?
I think what I got to do then is get like, because I have...
Get Jeremy to GM a post-event thing using the post-event rules. And then that way we cheated because he's heard how you do it.
I got to get the rest of... Like, if we're using that terminology, the rest of that flesh, I got to get that into the core rules and then skip it off to a bunch of GMs and say, run this shit and tell me what's wrong with it.
You know what would be a great post-event scenario?
What's that?
A reality TV star wins the presidential election of the United States. And then everyone freaks out about it. And then your characters have to go through the next 2 years of their life hearing about it every single day. And I just did it to all of you.
It's going to keep up.
If I got to listen to it.
It's going
to
keep up.
Everybody else does.
You know what my favorite part of it is? When shit pops up on Reddit, on the front page of Reddit, and it's like, today I read on the front page, it's like, China informs Trump global warming is not a hoax. And I'm just like... I'm like, that's the kind of shit I love to see because it's so zany that I'm just like,
Obama reminds Trump, you have to wash your hands after using the presidential toilet.
Did you see the picture of the two of them when they first like,
oh yeah.
Oh man. And they're both,
when he's showing them through the White House and sort of like, this is how things works around here.
Joe Rogan made that joke.
Yeah. And here's the microwave and I can't believe this is happening.
Joe Rogan made that joke about like, they took him into a room because the Trump's face is this like, oh my God face. They took him into the room and they're like, aliens exist and we fucking killed Kennedy. So, you know,
strap
in. Like, anyways, a little bit longer than expected. I need to get out of here and eat a peanut butter tube and go the fuck to bed so that my neck can repair itself so I can get strangled again tomorrow. My name is Bill. Otherwise known as Prol on the internet.
Done.
And come find me or don't. I don't give a fuck. Who are you?
I am Uncle Wyatt.
Uncle Wyatt.
Yep. And thank you for listening to Uncle Wyatt's Bedtime Stories tonight.
I have one last thing. I know we're running out of time here, but Wyatt sent me a message on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were like, who the fuck are you? Wyatt sent me a message on Facebook making sure that I wasn't coming last week, that I was coming this week. And I did not know who the fuck it was. I was like, who the fuck is this?
Well,
because it did not say Wyatt.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I forgot that we had our guest last week. Oh, good. I thought I was trying to find a way to end it quick. I forgot we had our guest last week, and then I thought we had double-booked Jeremy, and I'm like, oh, shit. It's like 3:30. I'm like, Jeremy, don't come. I'm sorry. Jeremy, don't come. I don't want you to, like, because I know you got to drive and all that, and it's just like, don't come. We'll get
but
you next
I,
week.
I didn't get to see the body of the message. I just saw your Facebook.
Yeah, you're like, who is this asshole?
And I'm like, who is this? Anyway, sorry to sidetrack, but that was awesome. Who the fuck are you?
I asked the exact same question last week.
Last but most definitely not least, our resident DM, the Dungeon Master.
Apparently doesn't pay a lot of attention to both hosts of the Benchcast. Thanks. Thanks.
Jeremy, you got any stuff you want to shout out? Social stuff? Anything like that?
I'm on Twitter, jhall247. Follow me, or as Bill said, don't. And if you played in games here at the Bench, look for my return in January. I think we're going to start back up again.
Cool. jhall247. You need to redo that and put bruh at the very end of it.
Bruh.
jhall247, bruh.
Limiting your characters, your tweets by four characters.
420 YOLO dragon. Hashtag bruh.
Swag dragon. A swaggin.
Swag dragon? Can you please incorporate a swag dragon into your...
And have then a just super millennial D&D thing?
A Kanye West soundboard for the dragon's voice?
A dragon that just sort of walks with a, you know... the swag and the gold around the neck.
That's right. That
would be awesome.
He's got a really loose neck that would sway like this if it wasn't for so much gold around it.
The actual opposite of my neck right now. I have about 10 degrees on either side. You know how to get a hold of us. TheDevilsBench.com, but don't go there right now because it's just a holding page until we get that shit filled in. But do come down to 436 Colburn Street East if you don't want to be a dick. I think that's all we have for you. And I don't know. Is that it? That's it.
That's it. Bye.